If you're like me, getting back in shape is always a goal, but that's what it remains, a goal. That's why I'm excited about our new advertiser, FitBod. FitBod is a fitness app that tailors workouts to fit your life, your goals, your gear, and even your schedule. It's like having a personal trainer in your pocket. Whether you're a gym rat or just trying to get back in the groove like me, FitBod evolves with you, tweaking routines to push your limits and maximize your gains. And FitBod keeps things fun, mixing in different exercises, reps, supersets, and circuits. It's like a new challenge every time you work out. It's time to ditch the boring routines and kickstart your fitness journey. Add FitBod to your workout essentials. Join FitBod today to get your personalized workout plan. Get 25% off your subscription by trying the app for free at fitbod.me/Zabe. Charlie, Zulu, Alpha, Bravo, Echo. That's fitbod.me/Zabe. Listeners have been emailing me about their great experiences when they visited a Tecovas store, the company renowned for upholding timeless traditions and delivering top-notch quality in every pair of cowboy boots. If you haven't experienced their exceptional craftsmanship firsthand, why wait any longer? Stop by your local Tecovas store, have a complimentary drink or two, and shop new styles. The smell of fresh leather and a friendly staff are at your service. Many stores even have custom leather branding to make your boots truly personalized. And with regular live music and events, there's no in-store experience like it. If you can't make it into a store, just visit tecovas.com. That's tecovas.com. They offer free shipping on all boots as well as free returns and exchanges and ship right to your door. Go to tecovas.com and find your new favorite pair of boots today. Today on the Zabecast, the 23-year drought of Team USA and the Ryder Cup on European soil continues. And who knows when it'll ever end. We got week four in the NFL, overtime madness, the bird heard round the world, and the end of Fitzmagic. All that, plus do we really want voting by smartphone? If you've got 45 minutes to kill, then buckle up and let's go!
Here we go!
Monday, October 1st, 2018. Thank you for the download. And who doesn't love a game 163? And we've got two of them today. The Brewers at the Cubs and the Rockies at the Dodgers. As you people know, I am, of course, very happy for and pulling quietly, without jinxing it, for my friends up there in Milwaukee. What a season you've had, and what a run you've had to reel in the Cubs and to tie them on the final day of the regular season. I mean, it's just hard to believe. Now you've got a one-game playoff where you could relegate the mighty Cubs, the fan base that invades your stadium like ants at a picnic every time you guys play them, could relegate them into a one-game wild card play-in or play-out situation. Man, is that juicy. It's going to be fun to watch midday on Monday. If you can't get out of work, just quit your job. I mean, like, jobs come and go. When is the next time you're going to play the Cubs, Brewer fans, on game 163 for the right to win the division and to send the Cubs into the wild card after they seemingly had the division wrapped up? I mean, this won't come around. I guarantee you this, the next time the Brewers play the Cubs in a game 163 to knock the Cubs into the wild card, it's you will have changed jobs. I'll just say that. You will have changed jobs or retired. So I think today is a good day just to tell your boss, no. Or better yet, say, I'll be at work. I'll be at my battle station, but the game will be on. And I will just be doing mission critical work from about noon until whenever the game is over. Looks like Quintana versus Chacin. We'll see about that. Could be a bullpen day for the Brewers. Quintana is the best bet for the Cubs. He's got great numbers against the Brewers, and he's not on short rest. We'll see what the Brewers do to oppose him. The other subplot of the game, of course, is whether Christian Yelich can go ahead and still win the Triple Crown. I didn't know that extra games counted for the Triple Crown. That a game 163, those stats get piled in. Now, batting average, Yelich is comfortable there. He's got a 13-point edge over Scooter Gennett, so that's done. Home runs, Nolan Arenado homered twice on Sunday, so he now leads the NL with 37. Yelich is tied for second with 36. And Aguilar has 35, so there's a lot of complications there. It's too much to ask for Yelich to have two home runs to get to 38 en route to the Triple Crown as the Brewers win this game. Like, that would, you can't ask for that, can you? I mean, maybe you can. Be incredible. RBI Yelich remains two behind Javi Baez, now tied with Arenado. Again, I think if the home runs happen, the RBIs will take care of themselves. Either way, the Triple Crown will be nice. And by the way, he'd be the first NL guy to do it since 1937 when Joe Ducky Medwick of the Cardinals did it back then. Miguel Cabrera of the Tigers in the AL did hit the Triple Crown back in 2012. Triple Crown, for those that don't know, you got to win a batting title, home runs, and runs batted in. Tough feat to do. All right, let's talk a little bit of golf here. I guess I'll do a full recap with my golf nerds this week. I got to put out the bat signal to get the nerds to assemble. Ryder Cup goes to Europe, and boy, do I feel stupid for thinking comfortably. And for betting, by the way, it's $100 down the drain. Actually, $50 because Gitter did buy half of my $100 share. Stupid of me to think, we're loaded. Tiger's back, and we are loaded. That's the problem. Tiger's back. Somebody made the joke on Twitter. You know Tiger Woods is fully back when he now is sucking at the Ryder Cup. 0-4, and not just 0-4, but I mean 0-4 and zonked out of it for the better part of 2.5 days until he showed a little bit of life on Sunday. More on that in just a second. So anyway, the U.S. gets boat raced in France by a European team that just had the combination from hell that went 4-0, Mollywood, as they're calling it. Francesco Molinari, who went 5-0 for only like the fourth time in Ryder Cup history, and 4-0 with Tommy Fleetwood. Tommy. They were unbeatable. And they went through our team, any team we threw at them, like the proverbial shit through a tin horn. They were unbelievable. So your final match score, 17.5 to 10.5, most lopsided victory since consecutive 18.5 to 9.5 victories by Europe over 10 years ago. We're getting blown out in too many of these. Now, am I pissed that the USA lost because I'm American and I'm rooting for the USA and I've had money on Team USA? No, I'm not pissed about that. I'm pissed that we, yet again, did not have an interesting Ryder Cup Sunday. Fuck you, Team USA, for not even making it close. And what I'm mad about is, you know, Furyk's going to take a lot of heat for this. And that's how it works. The captains always take the heat, and they take the credit when they win. And Furyk was not great. I mean, sending Mickelson out on Friday, an alternate shot, was fucking brain dead. Like, what are you doing? Resting Finau, one of our better young players who wasn't exhausted. That's a phrase I don't want to hear anyone say again. Not a phrase, that's a word I don't want to hear anyone say again. And I guess to the players' credit, I never heard any of the players say, well, I'm exhausted, that's why I'm playing bad. But a lot of the media members are like, well, I think Tiger's just exhausted. Hey, it's fucking golf. He's not running consecutive marathons, okay? He could have if he was a little bit drained from winning the Tour Championship on Sunday. And yes, he had to fly all the way to Paris. That is a grueling flight of about 7 hours, 8 hours, 9 hours, depending on how fast his jet went. Private jet where I'm sure he could lay down and sleep. He had all day Monday, all day Tuesday, all day Wednesday, all day Thursday to catch up on a sleep. Now, when I say all day, I know it's not all day because there's a ton of shit you got to do. Practice rounds, photo sessions, media sessions, galas, banquets, this, that, the other. I don't want to hear exhausted. If he was exhausted, and that's why he played like shit the first couple of days, then take yourself out of the lineup. But I'm getting ahead of myself. So, Furyk wasn't great with the pairings. That said, there was a couple of things that were tough for Furyk. Let's be honest. You're going to sit Phil Mickelson for two full days and then throw him out there like Jarmo Sandalin on Sunday as an expected loss? Pretty tough to do, given that Phil was on the task force. Remember that? So you had to play him at least once. Phil's going to catch a lot of blame because he sucked. And, of course, Phil authored the... What a way to be on the highlights forever. Rinsing a tee shot on a par three right in the lake and then turning to Francesco Molinari and taking your stupid visor off, or actually it was a hat, and shaking his hand with your glove on. For those that don't play golf, that's embarrassing. If you're going to have to finally concede a match, you really want to do it on the green where your opponent has a really short putt to beat you. You don't want to just go, okay, and here's my shot on the fourth. Okay. Nice match. Way to kick my ass. Okay, thank you very much. Like that highlight, that visual of Phil doing that, and then the handshake, that's forever. That was it. That was the match. Like, you would have thought he would have said, okay, this is bullshit. I am not going to put this in the water. But he sucked all week, and you know, people are going to kill Phil Mickelson. You couldn't leave him off the team either. Not just because he was a task force guy, but you know, he was like one slot outside the points. And this is because he won one event back in Mexico, short field world golf championship event, back in March, April, May, something like that, springtime. Might have been March. Don't quote me on the details. He won it back in the spring. And they weight wins too much. So they're going to have to reconsider the points, I think, seriously. They're going to have to reconsider a lot of things. Maybe add even more captain's picks. So he was a captain's pick. Tiger was a captain's pick. You couldn't not pick either one of those guys. And Finau was a captain's pick. And who was the fourth captain's pick on the U.S. team? U.S. Ryder Cup team 2018, Wikipedia. Yeah, you know, you should have done this before you started recording. Yeah, fuck off. It's a podcast. What are you paying for today's podcast? Nothing. But I subscribed to the Friday one. That's different. All right, 2018 Ryder Cup. Here we go. Teams scrolling down. DeChambeau. DeChambeau was one of the other Ryder Cup captain's picks. You going to not pick DeChambeau? I mean, the guy damn near won. He won two events in the playoffs, right? So, the captain's picks, they were kind of set in stone. They had nothing to do. And I didn't want Kuchar. Kisner probably would have been better. Maybe. Xander Schauffele, maybe, probably would have been better. You just don't know. Bottom line is this. We can't have Tiger Woods going 0-4. And we can't have Tiger Woods looking and sounding like a zombie. If you saw his interview with Todd Lewis of the Golf Channel after Saturday's matches, he sounded fucking out of it. He sounded like he had just swallowed a bottle full of who knows what goofballs. And I'm not saying there's anything wrong with it per se. He might have been in bad pain. His back could have been fucked up. Who knows? But if his back was bad and he was on major painkillers and he was zonked out of it, then why is he playing? Did he force himself into the lineup? Did Furyk feel like, oh, I got to play Tiger? 0-4. And not only 0-4, he was moving slowly and gingerly, and he had the 1,000-yard stare. And bottom line is, now with this 0-4 on top of his previous bad record in paired matches in the Ryder Cup, there's no spinning it. He's bad at this format. He's bad at this thing. And I thought that after Tiger Woods had invested time as a captain or and as an assistant captain these last couple of sessions, I thought we're going to see a new Tiger. Just like we have a new Tiger when it comes to his persona, I thought we'd have a new Ryder Cup Tiger. Nope, same old Ryder Cup Tiger. Doesn't play well with others. Just not how he's wired. Johnny Miller, I think, said it best. He goes, his dad did not wire him this way. I mean, there was one point, it was a Saturday afternoon, early going. It was him and DeShambles in alternate shot against the meatball and the hairpiece. Not the hairpiece, the meatball and the flowing hair. Mollywood. And I believe Molinari hits a ball, hits a big old cut flare. One of the few shot tracers we got to see, which is a whole nother story. Hits a flare into the water hazard on a par five off the tee. And what does DeShambles do? He gets up there and he hits his own driver, exact same flare, into the water. Hello? Hello? Where are you on match play? You dink a three wood or a three iron into play. You play the percentages. Hello? You play the percentages. Why didn't Tiger Woods grab that driver out of DeShambles' hands and say, no, you're not hitting driver. They're in the water. You're going to put it in play. I'm going to rip a three wood, and we're going to chip up and down for an easy birdie, and they're going to be lucky to make par. But no, what do? They put it in the water, and they end up, I think they lost the hole, as a matter of fact. So there was that. I didn't like the fact that Furyk, as captain, didn't do a better job of tone setting, both before the event and after the disaster on Friday afternoon. To me, Furyk should have been hammering. We are the underdog. These guys are a great team. Winning not on your home soil is 10 times tougher. And we are going to need our best from everybody. Hammer it home. Hammer it. I didn't hear any of that leading up to it. I thought our guys walked in there kind of soft, like, oh, we kicked their ass last time, and now we got Tiger this time. We're going to kick their ass again. Doesn't work that way. I didn't like that Furyk kind of downplayed the fact they played like shit on Friday afternoon. Well, no, we're not worried. You know, we were 3-1 in the morning and 0-4 in the afternoon. We're going to try to close this gap. What I wanted Furyk to say was, hey, I'm not panicking, and I believe in my guys, but I've told them, urgency. We have to win this next. We have to put everything into winning this morning session on Saturday morning, because in this event, leads are always larger than they look in the rearview mirror, and this event can get away from you quickly if you're not careful. I didn't hear that tone set from him. Sergio becomes the all-time points leader. What else? Just looking at my notes here. I love the course. The course was perfect for this. You know, the setup of the course was revenge, and it was strategically smart for the Europeans, who I think are straighter drivers by the numbers with their team. Not in general, but just straighter by the numbers. It was a good sort of, hey, fuck you to how Hazeltine was set up. The Europeans were very critical of the setup at Hazeltine, and I didn't like it either. It was a middle of the green, pins in the middle of the green, birdie fest with very little rough. And I think there was only like one water hazard. No, two water hazards on the entire course. And this was different. This was like TPC Paris with bulkheads and tiered greens and weird fairways and a bunch of shit that could trap you and a lot of rough. And I liked it. It was interesting. I mean, the fact that there was a triple bogey halved hole on par three. I love it. I thought it was a way more interesting Ryder Cup, even though we got our asses kicked. The venue was great as well. My God, the grandstands and just the sight lines. Incredible. I mean, the photos of the 7,000-seat grandstand on the first tee, which is the largest grandstand I think ever constructed in golf, incredible. It's so good for the game as a golfer to have those images, to make an impression on athletic kids who are thinking, I'm good at this. I'm good at baseball, good at basketball. I can play a little football. But my dad took me golfing, and I really like it. Is golf cool? And then they see photos of 7,000 people doing the skull chant at the Ryder Cup. That's the kind of thing that gets into the head, into the imagination of young kids who are the next stars of the next generation. And they go, I want to do that. That looks fucking cool. I don't know how they're going to top a 7,000-seat grandstand on the first tee. I also have no idea how they construct basically these miniature apartment complexes alongside certain holes. Like, you know, where the luxury suites that are stacked three high? Man, whatever company does that now, they must make a mint. And those pop-up apartments overlooking golf holes must cost a shitload of money for sponsors. Speaking of grandstands, first tee, and the next Ryder Cup was at Whistling Straits in 2020. And oh, by the way, I am there. I am there. I am 1,000% there up at Kohler. It's going to be great. Here was a thought I had. Very few matches actually came to 18 until Sunday at the Ryder Cup. And even on Sunday, I think only one or two went to 18. At Whistling Straits, number 18 is such an incredible hole, incredible venue with incredible, you know, seating opportunities for everybody around there. I thought they should switch the nines. Oh, yeah. You may think that I'm nuts or that this is a heretical thought. Oh, no. I do believe behind the 10th tee, and I'm trying to picture how it is at Whistling Straits. I've been lucky enough to play it more than once, but I can't quite remember. I think there is a fair amount of space behind number 10. You could put a massive grandstand there, and it would be great. And better yet, you could have massive galleries watching the play come through number 9, which is actually number 18, and number 17, which is one of the great golf holes in the world, Pete Dye Masterpiece, a 236-yard from the back tees fright show, a terrorizing par 3 along the edge of Lake Michigan. You will guarantee that that hole, 17, gets played as well. Now, it won't be as high leverage, it won't be as high stakes, because these would be holes 8 and 9, not 17 and 18. But if it was me, if it was my setup, I would say, you know what? I'd flip the 9s to make sure that the fans get to sit around 18 and see play come through, and to make sure 17 actually gets played more than once or twice at the Ryder Cup. Now, who's going to be on the team in 2020? Impossible to tell. Who's going to be the captain? We don't know. That has not been named as of yet. Plenty of guys that were assistant captains that could be thrown into the mix. Phil Mickelson's not going to be on the team. That's a lock. Could he be captain as soon as 2 years from now? Maybe. We'll see. Tiger, will he be on the team? If I had to bet, I'd say no. I don't know what they're going to do the points qualifying, and I want to see him go through another year where he played 18 events and rack up the points that he did. And then another year after that, I mean, I'm not rooting against Tiger Woods' comeback. I'm just playing the odds. I have a hard time believing he'll make the team on points. Now, what if he doesn't make the team on points, and what if he is somewhat close? Will he be a captain's pick again? Could you have the balls to say, we know he sucks in the Ryder Cup, and we know that basically he kind of brings the whole team down, and he can't pair him up with anybody, but we're going to take him anyway? Could they do that? Would they do that? I don't know. Hopefully some of the younger guys come through and are on the team in 2020. Xander Schauffele, Patrick Cantlay, Bo Hostler, Peter Uihlein. Finau looks like he's a stud for years to come. JT and Spieth were great this week. Bubba was a complete disaster, and nobody likes him. And Webb Simpson was really solid, even though he's not my favorite guy. Ricky was not very good. And DJ and Brooks Koepka, I mean, these guys are wired to do their own thing, to play their own ball in white-knuckle events in which they're just in their own world. They're not dynamic personalities. They're solo acts. So either you pair them together or I don't know what you do. But there you go. Ryder Cup. TV coverage sucked. I mean, no shot tracer, almost. I mean, there was shot tracer on a couple of holes. That was it. It's disgraceful. I had somebody who knows a thing or two about television say that the units are very expensive, and NBC just, they have a budget, and they're not going to spend a lot on shot tracer. Fox, meanwhile, trying to make their mark in golf and television, they spend for shot tracer everywhere. So boo NBC for that. Also, how many times did you hear the phrase from Dan Hicks or somebody, this was just a moment ago? It's like, hey, you know what? While you were watching Dustin Johnson spend 2.5 minutes lining up a chip shot, this big thing and that big thing happened in matches that we have barely showed you all day long. Boo. And why can't we just pay for an app? Why can't we just pay for a pay-per-view where you can just punch on your app or on DirecTV any match you want? Hell, I'd love it if there was a shortcuts version of every match that showed every shot with shot tracer so I can see, ooh, Ricky hit a snap hook here. Ooh, so-and-so did this. Because I'm a golf nerd.
Damn you people, this is golf!
Congrats to Europe, jerks. All right, that's enough about golf. Let's talk National Football League. What a week it was. And by the way, yours truly, my 50,000 star lock of the new solar calendar, the Patriots minus a mere 6.5, came moonwalking home with an easy victory. Kind of had the league kind of wired this week. I don't know what my official record is. Sally will have it for me this afternoon on 980. But still, pretty good. What a week. What a week. What a week. Earl Thomas's finger. We got Doug Marone's chart. We got Frank Reich's swagger. The Fitzmagic is gone. We had 3 overtimes and almost 3 ties. And I had yet another blistering complaint with DirecTV and the stupid NFL blackout rules, but more on that in just a minute. All right, let's start with the, let's go through the games here. We'll start with the Patriots first up. Patriots roll over the Dolphins 38-7, the reported death of the Pats dynasty. Premature, as I said, it probably would be. Hello, Sony Michel. 25 carries, 112, and a touchdown for the Patriots. Ryan Tannehill stunk. 11 of 20, 100 yards, plus an INT. Miami was terrible converting on third down. They were held to 3 out of 11 on third down. Only had 172 total yards. Patriots had one of those drives to end the first half. 15 plays, marching downfield, capped off by a Philip Dorsett beautiful touchdown grab. Josh Gordon did play in this game for the Pats. 2 catches, 32 yards. Gronk left the game in the third quarter with a right ankle injury. We'll know more on that today. And Frank Gore for the Dolphins became the 8th running back to play in 200 games. So the Dolphins now fall to 3-1. They're no longer unbeaten. And the Patriots are 2-2. Dolphins, by the way, are at Cincinnati next week. Patriots on a short week. They host Indianapolis on Thursday night. In Atlanta, A.J. Green did it with 7 seconds left. Bengals 37, Falcons 36. Dagger. Dagger in this game. Matt Ryan had a huge game. 419 yards, 3 touchdowns, no interceptions, and nothing to show for it. Julio Jones had a 173. It was the Bengals in a back-and-forth game scoring with 5 seconds to go. Giovanni Bernard had 69 yards on just and 2 touchdowns in the game. The big news, though, Tyler Eifert, gruesome broken ankle. He is out for the year. One of 2 major broken legs among star players on this particular Sunday. Falcons have now scored 30 or more points in the last 3 weeks, and they have not won a game. Or they've gone 1-2 in that span. Bengals have played 3 of their 4 games so far on the road, and they're 3-1 out of the gates. Good start for them. They now get 6 out of 8 at home. We'll see if the Bengals can keep it up. Side note in this game, this was weird. Jimmy Carter got a birthday cake from Arthur Blank and the Falcons. Everyone out there know how old Jimmy Carter is? Take a guess. 94 years young. Happy birthday, Jimmy Carter. As Abe Pollin once said, where's the cake? Bring out the cake. Hold on. There you go.
Where's the cake? Bring the cake in.
Bring the cake out indeed. Jaguars roll up on the New York Jets 31-12. And Doug Marone has a chart. So leave him alone with his chart, will you? Up 31-12 after having just scored with 27 seconds left. Doug Marone goes for 2. And people are like, hey, what's up with that, man? And he's like, the chart says go for 2. It's like a guy at a restaurant who is stuffed. You know, you've been to a nice restaurant. You're not paying for the bill. It's client. You're a client, and the boss, you know, the people that are taking you out, they're paying for it. So you've stuffed yourself. Appetizers, a big old steak, maybe a surf and turf. And you barely have to roll yourself out of the restaurant. But as you're walking out to the car, you don't just grab a mint or two. You grab a fistful of mints. That's what Doug Marrone was doing. Maybe he was trying to rub it in. Maybe not. They're not division rivals. They won't see each other for a while. He said he had a chart. The chart says go for two. Okay. Sam Darnold stunk in this game. 17 of 34. That's 50%. Even I could do that math. A buck 67. 3 sacks on the game. 3 INTs. So the bloom is definitely off the... Remember when Sam Darnold was, oh, this guy's awesome. This guy's going to be great. That's why you got to wait and see. Give it a couple of weeks and let's just pump the brakes. Blake Bortles almost had 400 yards. Spread the ball around. Hit 10 guys throwing the ball. Fournette played for the Jaguars, but only had 11 carries for 30 yards, then re-injured his hamstring. So for all you Fournette owners in fantasy and for all you Jaguar fans, enjoy the next 3 weeks of wondering, is Leonard Fournette going to play or is he not going to play? Jets are now 1-3. They host Denver. The Jaguars are 3-1. They are at Kansas City. The Tennessee Titans stuck the dagger right in the neck of the Philadelphia Eagles in overtime. Man, this made my bye weekend as a Redskin fan. It was so great to see. 26-23 your final in overtime with just 5 seconds left. Mariota to Corey Davis for the game-winning touchdown. The Titans converted on not one, not two, but 3 fourth downs in that overtime. They even had Ryan Succop on the field to try what would have been a game-tying 50-yard field goal, but Mike Vrabel said, nah, let's go for it instead. 2 of the 3 fourth-down conversions. One was on penalty. It was legit. The other one was on just a breakdown in coverage where you're like, dude, what are you doing? Cover that guy, for God's sakes. Titans trailed by 14 in the third quarter, and they trailed by 3 in overtime but went on to win. Carson Wentz threw for 348 yards. Philadelphia outgained Tennessee 432 to 397. But guess what? The Titans are the grittiest team in the league. They're now 3-1. And apparently Marcus Mariota's elbow is just fine. He had 43 throws for 344 yards. He also ran for 46 yards and a touchdown. Titans are at Buffalo next week. The Eagles host Minnesota with an extra couple of days of rest. That brings us to Indianapolis and Frank Reich's blunder, which let the Texans off the hook. Houston 37, Indy 34 in overtime. So here's the situation, as you probably have seen by now. 4th and 4 at their own 43. Tie game in overtime. 24 seconds left. And Frank Reich says, fuck it. Let's go for it. Andrew Luck bounces a pass in the flat on a short connection, and they turn it over on downs. After the game, Frank Reich bragged and said, I will go for that on 10 out of 10 times. We're not playing for a tie. Okay, but here's the thing. With only 24 seconds left, and on 4th and 4 at your own 43, and given that Houston has no timeouts left themselves, your chances, if you convert 4th and 4, of winning is probably, and I don't know what, somebody I'm sure looked up the win probability here. I'm going to just ballpark it like 25%. You yourself have to get another 20 yards or so comfortably to get in range for a field goal to win the game. With, I'm not sure how many timeouts they had themselves, but you got to get 20 yards in about 24 seconds. Not too likely. All right? And then if you turn it over on downs, which they did, all it takes is one pass for the other team to get in field goal position to beat you. And a tie, while tough guy coaches like Frank Reich may, you know, spit it out of their mouth like it's poison. We don't play for ties. Remember, ties are half wins. And oftentimes half wins separate you from other teams when it comes to the playoffs. And given that Indianapolis is not that strong of a team, they cannot run the ball, by the way, They had, 41 yards rushing in this game. Andrew Luck was sacked 4 times. They are a completely one-dimensional team, relying totally on Andrew Luck. That half win late in the year, as disgusting as it is to tough guy coaches on the podium, could have been very useful. I would have preferred if Frank Reich said, look, it was a calculated gamble. I thought we could have gotten the first down. I wanted to play for the win. We were being aggressive. It didn't work out. I'll live with that, though. Every situation's different. I felt in the moment it was the right thing to do. He doesn't have to say, oh, I'm so sorry. I shouldn't have done that. No, I'm not asking that. But the tough guy-ness of, I go for that 10 out of 10 times. Okay. It was a bad percentage play, and they got burned because Deshaun Watson hit DeAndre Hopkins on a 24-yard pass. No timeouts. Game-winning field goal. Kaimi Fairbairn. J.J. Watt had 2 more sacks. He is now the second fastest to 80 sacks in NFL history. I know what you're going to say.
Hey, how about that?
Just a stat. And Adam Vinatieri is now the king of NFL kickers. He recorded his 567th made field goal.
Hey, how about that?
Okay, I'm just giving you the stats. Andrew Luck, 62 passes. 464 yards, 4 touchdowns, no INTs, and a big fat loss. The Colts are 1-3. They're at New England on Thursday night. The Texans are now 1-3. They host in-state rival Dallas. Meanwhile, in Chicago, Ryan Fitzmagic, more like Ryan Fitztragic. Boo! Boo! All right. Everyone has been doing the Fitztragic thing, but okay. Fine. I had to do it. The Bears demolished Tampa Bay 48-10, your final score. And it was a 48-10 where you say, game wasn't even that close. Mitch Trubisky threw for 6 touchdown passes. That is a new personal best and one off the NFL record for touchdown passes in a game. The Bears led 38-3 at halftime and then basically cruised home in the second half. Trubisky, 354 yards, 19-26. It was so bad for Fitzpatrick. He was 9 of 18 and 1 touchdown, 3 INTs, that Jameis Winston came in. Winston still threw 2 picks in relief when it was garbage time. Oh, yeah, Khalil Mack had a strip sack in the first half. He now has a sack and a forced fumble in all 4 games this year. It's just so stupid. The clown suit that John Gruden is wearing on this one continues to grow and grow and grow. And once again, let's see. The Buccaneers played Monday night, plus they had to travel. Trouble. Tight end O.J. Howard left with an knee injury. No word on how bad that is. We'll find out more today. Buccaneers fall to 2-2, as now I think the Jameis Winston era is back in play in full force. I, like many other idiots, played Fitzpatrick saying, the matchup sucks. I understand that. The Bears have a great defense. But you know what? Even if the Tampa Bay Buccaneers fall behind quickly, they'll throw a lot. So from a fantasy standpoint, it'll be fine. It was not fine. So now I'm stuck with Ryan Fitzpatrick. I'm going to drop him, obviously, and find somebody else, and it's a complete mess. Tampa Bay is 2-2. They have a bye. Chicago is 3-1, and they, too, have a bye. Meanwhile, down in Dallas, Zeke Elliott and the Cowboys escaped the Detroit Lions 26-24. Brett Maher with a 38-yard field goal with zeros on the clock as the Cowboys get past the Lions. A massive day for Zeke Elliott. He had 240 all-purpose yards, ran for a buck 52 on 25 carries, had 88 yards receiving on 4 catches, but most notably, it was a 38-yard connection from Dak to Zeke in the air that set up the game-winning field goal. They showed a dispersion chart of every Zeke Elliott catch as a Cowboy in his year and a quarter, and it was a joke because there's all these dots that are either 5 yards behind the line of scrimmage or 5 yards in front of the line of scrimmage or beyond the line of scrimmage. And then there's one dot, 31 yards downfield. That was the pass they completed to set up the game-winning touchdown. Detroit took the lead on a sweet Golden Tate touchdown. He had a monster day, 8 catches, buck 32, 2 touchdowns. Maybe I'm not the only one saying this, but Golden Tate is the most underrated badass wide receiver in the NFL. Am I right on that? I mean, he's perennially underrated. And it was not enough to win. Dak also saved the day because he got sacked, recovered his own fumble late on that game-winning touchdown drive, threw the ball out of bounds. Oh, yeah, the game-winning touchdown was set up by a roughing the passer penalty on what was a late whistle or a confusion as to whether a guy was down or not. This league continues to be so infuriating. Terrence Williams for the Cowboys was a healthy scratch for the first time in his six-year career. Detroit falls to 1-3. They host Green Bay this week. Dallas is 2-2. They are in-state rival, the Houston Texans. Green Bay blanks Buffalo 22-0 in what I told you people was a double error of recency game. Not only did I say this, but Mr. X said this as well. Double error of recency. Ooh, the Packers played like shit and lost to the Redskins. Ooh, the Bills played great and beat the Vikings. I bet what just happened, the last thing I saw, is going to keep happening. Wrong. Green Bay with their first shutout since 2010, and I will allow an 8-year since stat because 8 is close to 10. You know my rule on since stats. If it hasn't been 10 years, don't give me no since. I don't want to hear no since. Well, it's the first time since 2015.
Get out of my face with that crazy stuff.
That's
ridiculous. The Packers beat the Bills 22-0, your final score there. Bills are who we thought they were. Josh Allen is who we thought he is. He was a disaster in this game. 16-33, 151, 2 picks, had 7 sacks. He was under siege all day long. Rodgers, I tell you what, he moved around great. It's like his knee is actually getting better, which I didn't think it would. He did slide after a long scramble and kind of got hit. And you're like, every time he scrambles, you're like, ah, man, do you really have to do that? Rodgers did have an interception in this game. It broke a streak of over 150 straight passes without a pick. It still took 2 tips, though, to have that pass picked off. Rodgers hit Adams and Allison for 80 yards each, moved the ball well. But Rodgers said, we got to score. He said, we played as bad offensively as we could with that many yards. Kelvin Benjamin left the game with a concussion, as did Geronimo Allison. We'll have to see how bad they are this week. They'll both probably be in concussion protocol. Bills are 1-3. Tennessee is up next. Green Bay is 2-1-1, and they are at Detroit. In Oakland, the wildest game of the day, the Raiders outlast the Browns in overtime, 45-42, and the Browns was robbed. In fact, the Browns should actually be 4-0 if you're going to play the coulda, shoulda, woulda game this year. An absolutely insane reversal of a first down call late in the game. I don't know. I guess Alberto Riveron saw something different on this play. Everyone, it seems like, every announcer, everyone on Twitter, even the game recap said, and the Browns were victims of a very controversial reversal. This is instant replay. This is what you instant replay fanatics say. We got to have it in case a bad call determines the outcome of a game. This was a horseshit reversal, and it determined the outcome of a game. It fails almost as much as it succeeds, and it should have a failure rate, instant replay, of almost zero. Instant replay should work 97.2% of the time, and maybe 2.8% of the time where there's just a weird interpretation of something. This was a travesty. Oh, and there were several other bad calls in the game. 2 quick whistles. Marshawn Lynch might have had a big run negated by a quick whistle. There was a complete joke of a roughing the passer call against Cleveland in this game. It was a mess. Pete Morelli, time to retire. Why is Pete Morelli still around? And Gene Steratore and Terry McCauley and Ed Hockley, they're all gone. Morelli's not a good referee, I'm sorry. No, probably a nice fella. Looks like a cartoon character more and more. 3 lead changes and 38 points in the fourth quarter alone in this game. Derek Carr had four touchdowns and the game-tying two-point conversion with 30 seconds left to Jordy Nelson. Quick aside, has anyone calculated the percentage success of two-point conversions when a team needs it to tie the game in the last 2 minutes of the fourth quarter? Has anyone? Because I swear to God, it seems like whenever a team has to have a two-point conversion to tie the game, they get it. Almost always. And if not always, it's like 90%. Just what it seems like. Marshawn Lynch had a big game, 20 carries, a buck 30. I'm surprised. This is now year two of the Marshawn Lynch in Oakland revival. I thought he was done from the minute he set foot in Oakland, but he obviously can still get it done. Browns were up 12 at one point in this game, Browns were up 14, and then they were down 12, and then they took the lead again before coughing it up in overtime. What a game. Oakland wins. Chucky's first win. Says it feels like 100 years since he last got a win in the NFL. Raiders are 1-3. They're at the Chargers in LA next week, and the Browns are 1-2-1. They host Baltimore in Seattle. In Arizona, the Seattle Seahawks beat the Arizona Cardinals 20-17 on a Sebastian Janikowski 52-yard field goal at the gun. Okay, now that that's out of the way, not the story of the game. Not even close, and this is going to be something that's going to be talked about all week in sports radio. And you know what? It's actually a very good, interesting story. Oh, there's going to be a trillion hot takes on this. But it's an interesting dynamic. Of course, you've seen by now that Earl Thomas, who has been feuding with Seahawk management, saying either give me a new contract or trade me, broke his leg. Broke his leg and is out for the year. Did it defending a touchdown pass late in that game. As Earl Thomas was being carted off the field, instead of taking the platitudes and all the Cardinal players were kind of patting him on his shoulder pads, giving him, well wishes, another fallen soldier in this game that we all love so much, the NFL. Instead of kind of taking those platitudes, he just is ignoring all them, and then as he's being driven off the field, flips the bird to the Seattle sideline. Wow. I can say this, and you can say this, because you have watched the NFL as long as I have, many of you, some more than me. In your life, have you seen anything quite like that? Now, was it justified? Depends on who you ask. Depends on your position on this whole situation. You could say that this is exactly why the Seahawks were right to not give him a new contract, because he is approaching the end of his prime years, if not there already. And while he may have some usable years left, they don't want to pay for those years even at the current rate, much less they don't want to pay for those years at a premium rate. So in a way, you could say, well, Seattle was right. On the other hand, you can say, this is why the players are going to have to go on a serious strike the next time the labor deal is up. But guaranteed contracts are never going to happen in the NFL. What the Players Association needs to do is they need to do shorter contracts for star players, and they need to get rid of the franchise tag and all the other tags as well. They also have to get rid of the long contracts that are tagged to players to start their careers. You can't have four-year mandatory rookie contracts and 5 years of control for players who are first-round picks. Problem is, the union, they don't want to really go to bat for guys who are not yet dues-paying union members, and that would be rookies. And so they're not going to fight really hard to knock down the number of years that rookies have to be under contract to their first team. But the key to getting paid in the NFL is simple. I mean, it's simple, but it's still hard. It still involves risk. It's multiple short contracts. Because the shorter the contract, the more it's going to be guaranteed. And the more times you can be a true free agent with no tags whatsoever, the better the chance that a bunch of teams are going to get hot and horny to sign you for a whole lot of money. And that's what, you know, it's going to be tough to do because that's three big things that they're going to have to push for. Well, two big things collectively bargain. One is shorter length of contracts for rookies, getting rid of all the other tags, and franchise tag and all the other tags. And then you're going to have players who have the discipline to go, I only want a two-year deal because that's all I want because I want to be a free agent again after 2 years. Ideally, good players should sign three two-year deals in their first 6 years of the league. But this is going to be talked about, and deservedly so. I mean, it's I know Rodney Harrison, who once broke his arm in the Super Bowl, came out on Sunday Night Football and said, I hate to see this. This was not good. There are young players on that Seahawks team that look up to Earl Thomas. Not a good look. Rodney Harrison, for what it's worth. Oh, yeah. Anything else in the game? Josh Rosen made his first start as a rookie. He was bad. 15-27, 180, and one touchdown, no INTs. Maybe he was better than just that. I didn't see a whole lot of the game, but his numbers weren't great. Chris Carson did not play this game. Mike Davis, the third-year pro out of South Carolina, had 101 yards, two touchdowns, says, I've been waiting for this week, waiting for this day for a long time, says he believes he could be the starter there. But the story of the game was, of course, Earl Thomas and the Bird. Sam Bradford was inactive in this game. Mike Glennon was up, so that'll make my boy Solly really happy. Otherwise, though, Cardinals fall to 0-4. They're the only winless team in the NFL now that the Raiders have won. And the Seahawks improved to 2-2. Seahawks host the L.A. Rams, and the Cardinals are at San Francisco. The Saints win without a big day from Drew Brees. Now, that's weird to say, isn't it? New Orleans 33, the New York Giants 18. Alvin Kamara was crazy. 19 carries, 134, three touchdowns, including a 49-yarder. He totally outshone Saquon Barkley, only had 10 carries for 44 yards. Drew Brees did not throw a touchdown in this game. I repeat, Drew Brees did not throw a touchdown in this game. Michael Thomas only had four catches, and the Saints won going away. It helps the Giants' offense is still hot garbage. Struggling again, didn't score 20 points, one of the lowest scoring teams in the league. And Taysom Hill. Taysom Hill is amazing. He did, like, return to punt, had four carries, threw a pass, and had a fake punt for a first down in the first quarter. The balls on Sean Payton sometimes just totally impress and amaze me. First quarter game, and Sean Payton says, oh, we're at our own 35? Let's call a fake punt. Why the fuck not? The legendary Mike Westhoff with the trick play that worked out beautifully. And on the play itself, the Giants even sniffed out, hey, this looks like a fake. They still couldn't stop it. Odell Beckham had an okay game. I think he had about 80 yards completions, no touchdowns, or 80 yards receiving on about six completions. He did have to get an IV at halftime. The New York Giants fall to 1-3. They are at Carolina next week. And the Saints are now 3-1. They wait my Washington Redskins off a bye on Monday Night Football down in the Big Easy. In L.A., the Chargers beat the Niners, but only by two. They were 10-point favorites, 29-27. They had a rally to do it. Chargers fell behind 17-6 before the half. Then they scored 20 unanswered. C.J. Beathard, he was okay. 23-37, 298, two touchdowns, two INTs. Phillip Rivers, 25-39, 250 yards, three touchdowns for him. He did pass John Elway for eighth place all time in NFL yardage. Melvin Gordon had a big day, 15 carries for a buck four. And is there a better bargain tight end than George Kittle? Six catches, a buck 25, and a touchdown. Side note in this game, the Chargers missed another extra point. They've now missed eight extra points since last year. That, of course, is number one in the NFL. Niners fall to 1-3. They're home against Arizona. The Chargers are 2-2. They host Oakland. And finally, the Sunday Nighter. Holy shit, maybe Joe Flacco is actually good. I won't call him elite, but maybe he is good. The Ravens handle the Pittsburgh Steelers rather comfortably. 26-17, your final score. And the game wasn't even that close because the Ravens fumbled going in on what would have been a 21-3 score. Yes, it was going to be 21-3. They fumble at the goal line. Pittsburgh rallies. They come back down. They kick a field goal to make it 14-6. Game kind of stayed competitive, but the Ravens were the better team by far. Joe Flacco had 42 throws, 363 yards, and two touchdowns. One of those to John Brown. Another deep strike. That guy can move. Three catches for John Brown, a 116. Steelers could not run the football. James Conner, 9 carries for just 19 yards. Baltimore improves to 3-1. They're at Cleveland in the Art Modell Bowl 1 for this year, the first of two installments. And then the Pittsburgh Steelers are 1-2-1, and they host. I put Pittsburgh down. I don't know who they host. I'll have to look that one up. If I close my browser here. You know what? Do you really want me to look this up live on the podcast here? I did all this work. Are you happy with the work I did here? And I'm going to get you this. NFL schedule 2018 week number 5, right? That'd be week number 5. Okay, I'm one click away. I hope you're enjoying a nice sip of water or a cup of coffee here. The Pittsburgh Steelers are home against the Atlanta Falcons. And that finally brings us to tonight's game, the Monday Nighter. The Chiefs are 3.5-point road favorites at division rival Denver. Total is 54.5. Kansas City comes in with a league-best offense, averaging 39.3 points per game. Last year, Denver saw Patrick Mahomes in Week 17 once Kansas City had clinched everything, and Von Miller said after last year he knew this kid was going to be special. Von Miller does have 4 sacks on the year. That is tied for the league lead. Can Mahomes keep flinging it on the road Monday night? Yes, I'll take the Chiefs minus the 3.5 against the Denver team. Case Keenum will probably put up big numbers. Let me take the over, too. I know, I'm taking the road favorite and the over 54.5 on Monday Night Football. Normally, combo meal number one for the degenerate drive-thru is taking the home team and the over minus the points on Monday Night Football. I'm taking the road team and the favorite and the over on Monday Night Football. I know. It's embarrassing, isn't it? All right. We got plenty to chew about regarding the NFL as we head towards week 5. Now that we are going to be through 4 weeks of the year after tonight's Monday Night Football game, I will start Tears of a Clown. I know you're very happy about that. And we will take a longer look at the, statistical rankings of teams. You know, who's number one in this? Who's bottom in this? We're at the quarter pole. At the quarter pole of the NFL season. And man, just like me and Scott Lynn always say, hug it, cherish it, because this season, it goes by so quickly. All right, let's end on this today because, holy shit, it's 1:15 in the morning. See my dedication for you guys to give you this fresh podcast to start your Monday morning? I don't know if this is the greatest idea, and I'm not sure this is the state I want pioneering it anyway. West Virginia has decided to allow smartphone voting for the upcoming midterm elections. For the first time in our nation's history, voters in 24 counties in West Virginia will be able to vote using their mobile phones. And while some are hailing the decision because it'll make voting easier for members of the military deployed overseas, for which, by the way, I am all for that, experts are warning of, wait for it, possible... Wait for it. Security breaches. You may now slap your hand against your forehead. No, really? So we're going to have cell phone voting, and we're going to have confidence as a country that nobody has... Given all the hysteria over Russian interference, we're going to allow this. Okay. The state is partnering with a Boston, Massachusetts company called Votes, Inc., V-O-A-T-Z. Aha, it's cute. Votes has developed a secure mobile voting application that allows voters to receive, vote, and return their ballots electronically, the press release claims. That's a lie. You know how I know it's a lie? There is no such thing as a secure mobile application. There's no such thing as secure anything when it comes to the internet. Secure is a pencil and a paper. And it's not even that because of, hanging chads. We'll see. Hey, Brandine, did you vote? Nah, I've been playing Candy Crush on my phone. I ain't got time to vote. Why you gotta make fun of West Virginia that way? I'm sorry. My neighbors, my brothers, just to the west of me. I love West Virginia. All right, that'll do it for me today. I got to go to bed. Thanks for listening. Off we go on Monday into the wild blue yonder of twin 163s. Go Brewers. Go Yelich. Monday Night Football. I've got the Chiefs minus like a sucker. Thanks for listening. Download, subscribe, comment, like, tell three friends as well. Premium Zave available every Fridays. Zave.com/premium to sign up. Now get on out of here, and we will see you tomorrow. Wake me up when September.